Welcome to the United Basketball and Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Smith. We are proudly sponsored by my good friends at Dr. Dish. Contact Dr. Dish, mention this podcast, and receive an exclusive discount on their shooting machine. My hope is, as you listen to the podcast, you'll gain knowledge in X's and O's, leadership, and culture building. Now, let's grow the game together. I want to welcome Tyler Costin with PGC Basketball to the podcast.
Man, pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me. And anytime I get to talk lock left, you know, I'm in.
Yeah, there's so many different defensive philosophies out there, and I've been blessed to talk to quite a few coaches, but I know that you're a big lock left guy. You've got some stuff on YouTube. I actually think it's in your bio on Twitter.
It is. Hey, when you put in the bio on Twitter, you know you're committed, because that's when people call you out.
Right. I knew you were committed. Like, you just talk about one thing, but if it makes the bio, you're serious about it.
Absolutely. You know, I am. And, you know, what's interesting is this lock left thing has morphed over time as I've installed it for nearly 100 programs now myself. Every time I go and work with a program at a different level for a different gender, I learn. And so it is it's a living, breathing animal. And, you know, it's more than just make, you know, the ball handler dribble left. So I'm excited to dive into it.
Yeah, I am too, because even I have some probably misconceptions about it that we're going to clear up. So first of all, why are you so committed to it? Why are you so passionate about it?
Yeah, let me give you three reasons. One, because I'm committed to player development over everything. So as a coach, and really, you know, myself now, I'm a coach of coaches. I'm your trainer's trainer. I don't necessarily train players anymore or coach a team anymore. I'm blessed to be able to work with coaches, and that's just accelerated my learning, because every time I work with a different coach, I learn. And as you know, as a coach yourself, sometimes you get so locked into your team that your vision becomes tunnel. It's kind of very narrow. And, you know, whenever our preconceptions are challenged is when we can broaden. And I get challenged every time I work with the new team, because it's a new obstacle, a new problem. And, you know, how they learn and listen gets challenged. So one, you know, I'm all about player development, and I haven't found a system that develops players' weaknesses as well as the lock left. So I think if we pulled every coach in the country and we said, hey, what's one of the greatest deficiencies in your players' skill sets, they're going to say, we can dribbling, we can passing, we can finishing. It's a deficiency. And so, you know, a lot of times coaches are like, oh, you know, you lock left wins games because you're exploiting opponents' deficiencies. And I'm like, yeah, but that's not the real benefit. The real benefit is playing against this thing every single day in practice, year over year, from your youth teams on up. And when they get to you, they are equally efficient at attacking, passing, finishing with their right and left hands. And players with more options are harder to guard. Players with more options make any offensive system more effective. So that's my number one, is it's a player development system. I mean, because we can say, okay, now let's do some left-handed dribbling and passing drills, right? All we want. But what players want to do is they want to play games. And right, we know that we have trouble carrying over stuff from, you know, a drill to a game. So why not play a game that requires that offhand development? So that's one. You know, number two is it's efficient. So I get to watch practices from, you know, top college pro teams all the way down to youth teams, and there's just not enough time. And you know, this is, there's not enough time to get in everything you need to get in, right? And and then, you know, teams that have eight different, you know, defenses, and then they have to go in game situations, how are we defending each upcoming team? It steals time. And I just love it, because the lock left never changes. You don't have to change your game plan for an opponent. You can spend more time on what really matters, and you don't have to, you know, game prep as much for each game coming up on the weekend. And then the third thing I love about it is, you know, many thoughts make for slow feet, and we remove the thought process for players in the lock left. We're doing the same thing every single time, regardless of a player or a team or a scout. And so we can get really, really good at reacting faster. And just like, you know, other sports, defense is about speed. And so we can play fast. So that's why I love the lock left. That's why I'm passionate about it. Okay, I'm gonna give you a bonus, and I've talked for a long time. Sorry. The last one is, it just works. Like every team.
That's what every coach wants to hear.
Right. I mean, every team that stuck with it for a full season has improved their record year over year. You know, the only teams that haven't are the ones that are like, ah, this is too crazy. I didn't have buy-in and we cut it off. So I've just seen it work over and over and over again. And it makes, you know, it makes like mediocre defenders good, good defenders great, and great defenders just dominant. So that's it. So I mean, have I sold it well enough yet? I don't know. I'm just passionate.
That's good. Now I'm going to ask an obvious question here. All right,
let's go.
Am I pushing a left-handed player right, or am I still just guiding the whole defense to the left regardless?
Yeah, and that's a really good question. It's actually one of the most common ones. So thanks for asking it. Yes, this is not an on-ball defensive system. This is about shrinking the floor. And all coaches want to shrink the floor defensively. And so we've just decided to shrink the floor, you know, bilaterally. And we want to get the ball left and keep the ball left. So it's, so yeah, there's the added benefit of 90% of players being right-handed. So they're going to be a little bit weaker with what we're trying to do. But what we really want to do is keep the ball on the left-hand side of the floor and keep shrinking and shrinking and shrinking, loading up more and more defenders in a smaller and smaller space. And offense thrives on spacing, right? Spacing is the oxygen that allows an offense to breathe. And so the lock left, and really any good defense, is trying to suck the oxygen out of an offense. And you do that by stealing space. Offense wants space. They want double wide driving gaps, triple wide driving gaps. They want gravity on their shooters. They want spacing. Defensively, we don't want to give it to them. And so that's what it is. So it doesn't matter if they're left-handed or right-handed. They might be a little bit or a little bit less, more or less proficient. We just want to keep the ball on one side of the floor.
Okay. So let's just start off with the basic. I'm on the ball defender. Am I opening up my hips? Am I giving you a lane? Or am I just shading you to go to your left? How much am I doing this?
Yeah, so let's start. So layer one of the lock left is chase the ball. And so you really only need one or two players that are really good on the ball in the lock left, which is great. You can hide, you really only need three good defenders on the floor to run the lock left. And so whoever's chasing the ball, it's their job to pick the ball up as early as possible, as often as possible, regardless of who's bringing the ball up the floor, and to get the ball to cross half on the left-hand side of the floor. So how are they doing that? I don't care. Like me, if you watch, you know, great on-ball defenders, they all have a little bit different technique. You know, and I would say this is a teaching point of the lock left, and not that your question isn't really good. It is really good, and we have to make players better technically because we're not going to improve their speed and athleticism within a week, but we can improve their technique, right? So it's really good, but I wouldn't ever start there. So, for example, this is I think really important. So we're getting outside of lock left. We're getting into coaching mastery here. The most common question I get at the end of a coaching clinic is, "Hey, coach, what's a good rebounding drill? We were a very bad rebounding team last season." And I never give a good rebounding drill. Instead, I say this, and I understand it's a little bit, you know, limited, but I say, "Hey, if you need a rebounding drill to become a better rebounding team, you'll never be a great rebounding team." Because what that tells me is you're only focusing on rebounding when you run that drill. And you're only what you emphasize, right? And so I say, if you're looking for a drill to fix your rebounding problems, you're going to have that problem for a long time, right? And so, you know, when a coach tends to think of, okay, when you become better rebounders, the first thing they think of is, okay, box out. And then they're like, okay, how do I make my team better rebounding team? Is I'm going to teach the technique of a box out. And so they start with technique. So here's what I'm going to say loud and clear. I believe that starting with technique is limiting players and limiting upside. So this is the three-step framework that I would suggest for coaches to utilize when teaching anything: offense, defense, rebounding, passing, finishing, shooting, whatever, okay? And I would really encourage them to start with the read first. Most teams or most coaches start with the technique, which is, if we go back to box outs, right? Here's the technique of a box out, and we can argue over what the proper technique is. But I would argue that starting with technique actually is going to get you less results than starting with a read. And a read is when, why, and where. So when I did coach a team last, I actually got to coach against UCLA when Kevin Love was there. And it was my job to actually figure out why was he such a good rebounder and how could we limit his offensive rebounding. So I studied hours and hours of film on him. And this was the thing I figured out. It wasn't his technique that was so good. It was his timing. I mean, very simply, he started to move to rebound at least a second before anyone else on the floor went into any sort of technique or box out. He just started to move to get established position sooner. He anticipated a shot and moved into position sooner. His technique wasn't any better. It was just his timing. So we can have the best, let's switch to closeouts, right? We can have teams with the best closeout technique, but if they move into that closeout a second late, it's useless, right? So why would we start with closeout technique? Instead, we need to start with the read, which is when and why. So why is, you know, what's the visual read that says I should do this thing, A or B? And then when is, can I read that faster? So that is more important than any technique, especially defensively. So I would start with the read, okay? Regardless of what you're talking about, if it's going to be a stunt and recover, it's going to be a closeout, it's going to be a box out, it's going to be a help rotation, whatever. Start with the read. If it's going to be on ball defense, right? Start with the read. Can I pick up and channel sooner? It doesn't matter your technique if you're picking them up inside the 3-point line in the paint. It doesn't matter what your technique is. You're already beat, right? So that's the first thing I would say is first teach reads, okay? Then teach responsibilities. And I'll kind of say another word like principle, responsibilities and principles, okay? So it doesn't matter so much how a person does the job as long as they get the job done. And I think that role identification and clear accountability and responsibility is what makes great defenders or offensive players or rebounders or whatever. Like, this is your job. Whereas too often we start with technique and we're not holding them accountable. We're not measuring it. We're not grading it, right? So read first, know when and why. Second, clear accountability. Do not let the ball handler dribble to their right hand twice. That's your responsibility. If you can't do that, you can't be on the floor as what I call a chaser, an on-ball defender. And you might not get on the floor at all, right? So then third is once they know the read and they can get the read right every single time, two, they know their responsibility and they have accountability and they know how they can get playing time by achieving a very clear win, then as a coach, we should give them technique to help them get better at it. And I think just unfortunately, most coaches flip it and they say, here's your technique, here's your responsibility. And oh, let's watch some film and yell at you because you don't make the read quick enough. And so, you know, you ask about technique and it's a good question. I just think that's a great opportunity for me to really hit something that I think is missing for most coaches, which is flipping that order. So do you open up? Yeah, more so when the ball's on the left-hand side of the floor. You might be more 45 to the ball, 45 degrees with your stance to the ball when it's in the middle of the floor. And you might be more squared up to the ball when the ball's on the right-hand side of the floor. But a lot of it depends on how fast are you and how fast am I, right? And so that's why I don't like putting players in boxes. I like to empower them to explore the edges of the sandbox, but let them know what the responsibilities are within that sandbox. And coaching each player differently.
Yeah. No, that's good. Thanks for going into that. No, I mean, it's about layers, and I'm glad you hit the order of that. So I'm pushing them left. They can't go to the right, two dribbles. Once they cross half court, and obviously they're trying to get into whatever set they're trying to, because you want to keep the ball on the left side. How is my denial, my gap, my help side, yep, whatever you want to call it, how do we set that up to make sure it takes place?
Not only am I honored to host this podcast, I'm also a high school basketball coach myself, and my team just purchased the Dr. Dish CT. Dr. Dish knows that coaches work very hard to save every penny they can. So I sent back our old other brand shooting machine and got a discount. We also took advantage of their one-year payment plan, paid half now and half later. And my kids love this shooting machine, calling and texting me constantly to get in the gym. And players love immediate feedback. They're able to know their shooting percentage from every single spot they shoot from. And also, using the Dr. Dish app, they can track their shots throughout the entire season or the course of their career. This is a game changer. It's almost like I hired another assistant coach, call Dr. Dish, mention this podcast, and take advantage of our exclusive discount. Now back to the podcast.
Perfect. So, you know, layer two is called snipe the gap. And for me and my language, and language is so important for coaches and programs, right? For me, snipe the gap is the gap for me is any defender that's next to the ball that's not guarding the ball. So one pass away in coach speak. I like next to the ball for player speak because they can't really understand one and two pass away quite as well. So they're sniping the gap. And so what that looks like to the right is an all out deny to any pass one to the right. And what I actually teach, and this is, you're gonna start throwing rocks at me here pretty quick, because I'm pretty extreme, is I actually teach open stance, chest to the ball deny, as opposed to back to the ball, chin on the shoulder, high hand, high foot deny. And here's why. In the lock left, we would prefer for a player to go back door than to catch the ball to the right. We prefer for them to go back door because as we load it up, we get strong at the midline. Because whenever the ball gets to the left-hand side of the floor, we're getting strong at the midline, two passes away or help side defense. And so we're sending that back door right into our midline help. We're overloading that left-hand side, applying massive ball pressure to the ball handler. So they're dribbling the ball left at speed the entire possession. So we're straight high side, open to the ball, almost how you might play at the top of 1-3-1 zone, not allowing a ball reversal. Now, to the left of the basketball, we're going to be more in the gap. If you're thinking traditional pack line, we're going to be a little bit more in the gap, but their job is to never help, only to do what I call skirmish and snipe, which skirmish is what you might call a stunt and recover on penetration, but they never actually help. Their only job is to try to trick and force a pass and then shoot that gap immediately. So we're also trying to steal a pass there, but we're not denying the pass because if we miss that steal, we got the ball further to the left-hand side of the floor. And from that high kind of position, we're actually chasing them off the line and attempting to keep them out of the paint. So that's that'd be layer three, which is close off and out. So if layer two snipe the gap, layer three is close off and out. Every single catch, we want to make sure they dribble immediately. Every single catch. And that's different than a traditional closeout, right? Because traditional closeouts are, I want to contest a shot yep. while not allowing them to penetrate into the paint. Well, in the lock left, we want them off and out. We want to make sure that they dribble so they get off the line immediately. But then we want to try to body control them out of the paint. We love mid-range pull-ups yep. In the lock left. And so we just want to try to close them off and out. So I don't know if that answered your question or not, but you're getting me excited. I'm just seeing it all happen in my head right now.
No, that's good. So I'm thinking if you can get the ball to the corner, they should yep. not be able to pass out of that.
They shouldn't.
They should be locked in the corner. Yep. So
and we want dribbling baseline, which gets to your next question about post defense.
Yeah.
Full front on post defense 100% of the time.
Okay.
And full front 100% of the time is two for two reasons. One, if we're closing them off and out of that corner, we can't get caught behind that post on that penetration.
Right.
You've got to be sitting on top of it. And secondarily, if our players are doing their job on the ball, regardless of where it is on the right-hand side of the floor or the left-hand side of the floor, the ball handler should be dribbling immediately and they won't be able to sit there periscoping to toss that ball over the top. Right. In fact, they do. Good for us. We're strong at the midline. Let's go up and get this 50-50 ball unless you got a 7-footer, and then we probably lose anyway.
Yeah, and I would say, like, going back to your back door, a lot of teams back door to work on our practice. We work on it practice. We get it quite a bit in certain actions, but it's a really hard pass for a high school kid going to their strong hand, much less you've pushing that guy left, and there's the gap. There's a gap defender there, the sniper right there. So pushing back door, I would say, is not a bad thing. Allow them to go because that's a really, really, really hard pass to make.
A really hard pass to make. And, you know, I guess this is another principle of the lock left is I want to help teams not have to practice their offense very much. Like the lock left goal is we want to get 50% of our possessions in transition, 50% of them. So, you know, if we got a coin toss and, you know, you might catch a back door and have a 50, 60% field goal, you know, attempt. But on the other flip side of the coin, we have a breakaway layup or some sort of a right. fast break. We convert 60 to 70% of the time. You know, that's pretty good math.
That's good. And I'm going to ask about zone. So a lot of coaches play zone and they're very successful at zone. And you would keep these same principles.
Agreed. Yeah, that's what I love. Yeah. And so that's actually layer 10. So there's 10 layers.
Don't let me jump too ahead. Yeah.
No, it's great. But like once it's in, like full transparency, it takes a lot of time to retrain players. And they've been doing defensive zigzag drills their whole life. They're turning players. And to not turn someone dribbling hard left, but just continue to channel them, that takes a lot of retraining. And to not open up when someone goes right, but to step up, because a lot of times when a ball handler goes right, you know, players are tend to open up their hips and slide and try to cut them off. But instead to just sit on that high hand and allow yourself to get beat per se to the left is hard. It takes time. You're overcoming a ton of habits. So it does take time. But once all players have these habits of how we guard the ball, how we guard next to the ball, how we guard, you know, two passes away by just overloading the midline, and how we're going to then front the post. Well, then you can,
doesn't matter what you run.
Right. You can run a 1-3-1 or a 2-2-2-1. You can go full court, half court, whatever. It's just the same principle. So I love it. Actually, my preference is to do it out of a matchup, because then you can have your best on-ball defender always on the ball. You can have your best, what I call sniper, right in the gap to the left. You can sit your weak, you know, defenders on the bottom right-hand side as the offense is looking at it. They're never in the play anyway, you know, and it allows you to hide some offensive players on the court, get more shooting on the court.
That's really good. Well, since I went ahead and jumped like seven layers, and to the listener, I'm learning as much as you right now. We did not have a conversation about this previously. Like, I'm learning everything as you're learning everything. So hit what you want to hit next in any order, or what you feel like is important for us to know.
Yeah. Well, let me go two more things. Here's from implementation. Three more things for implementation.
And then you'll say four more things. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. You're starting to get to know me a little bit. All right. Here's the first thing from implementation. Play more games. So I would suggest a whole part, whole method of teaching this or any defense. Like, just like, you know, give them the reads, play a game of 5-on-5, debrief it, right? Then give them some responsibility. Say, we must improve in this, right? Here's your role. Here's your accountability. You must do this, this, or this. So for example, if we're playing 5-on-5-to-5, which is one of my favorite games, and I'll just give this tool to everyone. 5-on-5-to-5 is one of my favorite games for a couple reasons. One, it's short. And so you don't have to talk a lot in the middle of the game. One thing that really upsets players, and I think undermines their receptivity to coaching, is stopping scrimmages over and over and over again, every single possession, right? Like, of course they're messing up. It's basketball. It's a game of mistakes. You're not going to be able to stop the games. So don't train them in such a way in practice that they become dependent on you stopping and fixing everything. They've got to learn to fix it themselves. That's how games work. So limit yourself, coaches. And do not stop a game to 5 points, straight five, no win by anything. Okay. And then give them one thing at the end of the game. Here's the second reason I love 5-on-5-to-5. I play it by ones and twos. Here's why I like playing it by ones and yeah. Here's why I like playing by ones and twos. Couple of reasons. One, you get better spacing. When people know it's worth 2 points and double what a one is, they're going to stay outside the 3-point line more and not creep inside and jam up your spacing. Here's another reason. We're going to have more incentivized and energetic closeouts like we want in a real game. They're like, no, panic mode, right? And then it's just a fast game. All fouls count as points because we know fouls are errors and we got to foul less. So it becomes super fast games and it kind of incentivizes. Another thing I love about ones and twos is you'll find that you get more ball movement when you make twos worth two, because what it tends to eliminate, and I'm not against the mid-range, okay? Like, I believe in data, but if you can score from three levels, you're going to be a great player. Like, all great players can score from all three levels. We know this, right? But what it does is it gets players turned down those mid-range shots if they're not like a star player at game point, to kick it out, to give the extra pass, because like, yeah, I can make this, but it's only worth one. And I can't make it like 100% of the time. Let me kick out for that too. So it does incentivize a little more ball movement and less hero ball as well in practice. So it forms good habits. So play 5-on-5-to-5. And then after your first one, say, hey, we got way too many right-hand layups there. We allowed right-hand drives that resulted in right-hand layups. So here's what we're going to do. A right-hand layup that at the end of a right-hand drive is going to be worth 5 points. It's a knockout. If any team can get a right-hand drive that results in a right-hand layup, game's over, and have a quick consequence, whether you want a quick down and back or a, you know, a 5 push-up deal, whatever. And then all of a sudden, The offense is going to be trying to get it. The defense is going to be trying to take it away. You know, and you don't have to be yelling and screaming, lock him left,
right,
over again, right? And because like the game is the teacher. You know, we're not the teacher. Just set up the game in such a way that the structure gets what you want. And here's another thing too. Like they just start thinking game. Like the offense is going to be talking to each other more, trying to remind each other to get something. That's what we want on offense anyway, even if it's not that thing, right? Like, let's get flex, let's get whatever, let's get our ball screen, let's get our secondary. So anyway, that would be one, like play more games. Then be like, yo, we sucked at covering off right-hand drives. So now let's do this drill where we're going to work on our technique of how we're going to guard on the ball to eliminate right-hand drives. Or now let's work on our closeouts. And they'd be like, oh yeah, I believe you, coach. We do need that. I just saw it. I just got beat on that thing. Please help me. And so we don't have to convince them, then go back and play the game again. I've just seen so much greater improvement doing it that way, which is what we call a games approach or a whole part whole approach, as opposed to just drilling for the first 2 hours of practice and then playing 10 minutes of 5-on-5 at the end if they're good. So I'd say that'd be just an approach I would suggest for this or any other defense.
Yeah. No, that's really good. When you implement this with a new program, they pull you in. What is the most, and again, you may have already said this, but what is the most difficult thing for the players and the coaches to overcome? Because if they bring you in,
right,
you know, they obviously want to change something, but if a coach been doing it for 13, 14, 15 years, it still could be difficult. So what are some of the, is it, you know, letting a guy go back door, or you saying, hey, this isn't push weak hand, this is push left. So yes, you're going to see left-handed player and you're still going to do it. There may be several answers to this.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. For the coaches, it's learning to teach something new that's uncomfortable. And I get it. It's like, I mean, when I first started messing around with it, I wasn't very good at teaching it because it's new. And, you know, they might be really good at teaching something, a pressure man or, a matchup zone or 2-3 or whatever. And so they have to overcome the discomfort of learning again and not being as confident. You know, as coaches, we really thrive on confidence. Like we know more than the players. We've All right. got the answers and we love that, right? And to not have the answers and to display that level of vulnerability in front of your players, it takes some bigness on the inside, as does bringing in someone else to teach something, to acknowledge like, hey, this person can help us.
Right.
So I think that's probably what's hardest for a coach to overcome. The only thing I would add is you kind of are bad at it for a while, you know?
Yeah, like the learning curve for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think that'd probably be the biggest thing for the coach to overcome. You know, for the players to overcome, I would say buy-in. I think the buy-in is probably hard for them to overcome because when they are worse at it at first, they're like, I don't want to do this. You know, it's not working. But I'll say this for players, the moment they have to play against it and they realize how uncomfortable it is, that really helps with the buy-in. That really, really helps with the buy-in. So
that goes back to what you just said a minute ago. The game is the teacher.
Right.
So you can come in, the coach can be talking about it, but once they go up against it, like, no, this is good. This will work.
Yeah,
so that's really good. Well, coach, thanks for talking about this. Any last words or anything you want to share to listener? And you can obviously connect with Tyler on Twitter, and I'll post all that information in the show notes. But any last nuggets of advice?
Yeah, I would say this. So don't just try to get better to beat like the best teams or whatnot. Just be like, okay, what do we need to beat these three programs that are in our sights that we've got to overtake? It's like winning a race. You know what I mean? You're not trying to go and overtake the leader. You just take the next person, right? And so, so lock left might not be the thing for you. You might just need to become better 3-point shooters. You might need to become physically stronger. You know, you might, whatever, right? Whatever it is. So, but if those two, go ahead, coach.
Well, I was thinking there's a kind of a philosophy out there. You see a lot on social media. It's like, you need to prepare to beat the number one team in your league. Well, if a team, like my team struggles and in our league, the number one basketball team, single A, in the state is in our region. They've got several kids going D1.
Right.
I'll be honest, there's not a lot I could do right now to compete with them. They're beating 6 and 7A schools by 40 and 50 points.
Right.
So you're right. I need to focus on that. Can we get how high in the middle of the pack can we get? And I'm not setting up my entire offseason to beat this number one team in the state that's sending that guys will make money one day playing basketball.
Right.
Right. So I think that I'm glad you said that, because a lot of coaches are, you know, if you're the ninth place team in the league for three straight years and you're like, you know what can we do to be sixth? That, and don't preach, guys, if we don't get number one, it's not a successful season. Well, you're not going to have a successful season. And what message are you sending to your culture? So I just want to say, I appreciate you saying that, because, you know, that most people don't say, well, let's just finish two spots higher, because that's really good growth.
Yeah, but that's a win, and that gets your whole program excited. It gets your fan base excited. It gets your student body excited. The players get a little bit more pride. The kid that didn't come out last year because of a winning culture comes out next year. Like, it just builds, you know, just one thing at a time, plus right. one.
And you do that for 4, 5, 6, 7 years, maybe the day comes where you can beat that number one or number two team. But it's a long process. It's not just hey, let's have a great summer to focus on this improvement. But thanks a lot for sharing this about Locklift. I learned a ton, and I know the listener will be excited. You'll probably get a bunch of Twitter messages and things trying to reach out to hear a little more. Hopefully some guys will bring you in their schools, their programs to have you talk about it.
Would love that. I would love that. It's one of my favorite things to do.
All right. Thanks, Coach.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to the United Basketball and Leadership Podcast. Please take a moment to leave us a review and also leave a comment about what you enjoyed most about today's guest. I hope you'll join us on our next episode.